with Gray Man Media. I'm Austin.
I'm Eric.
And we are
the Baldcasters.
Hi, Eric.
What's up, dude?
This is our new show.
Yep.
Baldcasters.
Yep.
Yeah. So we're two of the fan favorites from Thoughts on the Mothership.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, our overlord, Master Devin Gray, has decided that we are deserving of our own show on the platform.
Mm-hmm. He even bought us this shiny new Rodecaster.
Yeah. So, concept of the show, we're going to have a lot of different sections where we're just going to kind of discuss some different things. A lot of different things that we're into, like comics, tabletop role-playing games, sports, that sort of thing.
You know, typical nerd shit.
Typical nerd shit.
There will be a drug special.
There will. There will be a drug special where we'll talk about all of our different experiences, our more recent experiences, as well as some of our older ones.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll get into it.
It'll be a great time.
It sure will. All right, cool. So, first section we're going to go into, our sports section. Mm-hmm. We're two very big sports fans.
Oh, yeah.
Primarily basketball. Mm-hmm. I'm a bigger football fan than you are, but we're both very big basketball fans. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So, there's been a discussion, readily for a long time, on the viability of... One, Eric, don't eat that.
Okay.
Jesus Christ. There's been a discussion around the league for a long time about the viability of one ring versus no ring. And, like, which... Like, should we put more stock into that one ring just because they have the one ring? Or, like, should we recognize greatness even without that championship-level effort? You want to go into this a little bit and tell us your thoughts?
I think the one ring should not put you over the top against another star that has no ring. That's established. So, like, saying that, like, I don't know, Kevin Garnett's better than our boy, not our boy, like, Karl Malone? Would you really say that just because he has a ring? You could, if you were making the argument, well, he's better because he has a ring and a defensive player of the year, that's different. But if it's just, if you're basing your argument solely on that one ring that was with three other stars in a easy path compared to others, I mean, sure, they were going against LeBron James, but it was like baby LeBron James.
Yeah, and I mean, there's obviously other things that we can go into, but I tend to agree with you that, you know, the one ring, while we shouldn't take anything away from having that championship, obviously, it also shouldn't put you over the top of, like, some of the other really great players. That, like, because, I mean, we can't hold too much against 90s players.
Yeah.
Because nobody really ate in the 90s.
No.
And I mean, we've had these eras of dominance from different teams and different players that, I mean, not everyone wins a ring. I would stretch that most people do not win a ring.
Yeah.
So it is hard to put the focus on that one ring. Now, if we're talking about two or three rings, there is a difference there.
Mm-hmm.
But I would tend to agree with you that with the overall lack of parity within the league,
yeah,
it is hard to put over those one-off teams and all that kind of stuff.
People like to put over that one ring is, like, far, far more important. But so you're saying that, like, Kyle Lowry is better than Derrick Rose. I love Kyle Lowry. Love him all in his thickness. But, like, putting him that highly because of his one ring with the Raptors, even though I'm a Raptors fan, I would not do that over Derrick Rose. And that's like saying Jason Kidd is better than Steve Nash, the two-time, almost three-time MVP, and that hard West. And it's just ridiculous that that argument is being made.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. One of the things that's kind of led a lot more to this conversation is the fact that players are more mobile than ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with LeBron James, the live decision that he made to go down to South Beach and play with Miami, you know, it has caused a wave of players moving around, having more power to choose where they want to play. Do you think that's good for the league?
Oh, yeah. Power to the players. Even though Kevin Durant went to the Warriors, it still brings precedence that players can do whatever they want, and it's not up to the fans. The NBA has taken like more and more power away from the fans over the years, and people still watch it, and I'm very happy about that, because sometimes the fans are dumb. Like when Zaza Pachulia almost got put into the All-Star game, but that's not what our topic is. But like, player mobility is the most important thing, because it means they have power and they're more in control of their careers.
Yeah,
because it wasn't really you don't really have loyalty per se, because people really want players to stay with their team, but when their team trades that player, they don't really care.
Yeah.
So it's not really fair. I mean, look at, like, this offseason, Danny Ainge tried to trade away Kemba Walker when he just signed him.
Yeah.
And then he traded away Isaiah Thomas. I mean, yeah, that was his third strike, by not trading away Gordon Hayward to get Miles Turner because he's selfish.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? It's just...
Yeah, well, and you know, you mentioned the Kevin Durant move to Golden State. That even seems like a very logical conclusion of that movement that was started by LeBron.
Yes.
Where LeBron goes to be more competitive with two of the really good players from his draft class. It just seems like a logical move that a player like Kevin Durant, who has been to a finals, was not able to get over that hump with his current team, goes to a top contender, and then just kind of blows everyone out of the water.
They're like, but what if we win? Yo, winning?
I like winning.
That's a great idea.
So this also leads back, you mentioned the loyalty of players. With, you know, fans really want players to stay, but don't care as much if they get traded away, right?
Mm-hmm.
We saw this a couple years ago with DeMar DeRozan. Traded DeMar from Toronto to San Antonio. Get Kawhi, which, I mean, basically an all-around just better version of what you had with DeRozan.
Mm-hmm.
Get over that hump. And, I mean, you know, that's just business. But when players leave, fans take it personally. So how do we get to where we're letting these players have the mobility while also recognizing that, I mean...
It's a business.
Yeah. Well, and, I mean, fan bases also want to be competitive, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you keep that of, like, you know, the Charlottes of the league and the Utahs of the league? How do you keep those teams competitive while also allowing these players to have their power and have their mobility?
You have to either A, if you always care about what the fans think, then you're never really going to win. That's just basic what it is. You have to do what's best. Sometimes you got to make those mistakes. Raptors have made those mistakes before. Caboclo, you know. Drafting Bargnani. You know, all these. Because you're trying to ride a trend, right? But it's all... You have to think what's actually best for your team versus what you think is best and what's actually best. Sometimes those are two completely different, you know, things. And it's hard to see it. And you have to take a lot of perspective into it.
Yeah. So within this whole, you know, craziness of player mobility and this era of mobility that we're living in, we're also living with two kind of conflicting forces going against each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've got this transition of teams going to small ball, right? Where, you know, you've got shooting guards that have switched over primarily to power forward. Players like DeMar DeRozan, Jaylen Brown. Small forwards going to power forward.
DeRozan's been playing power forward, too, and it's been the most efficient he's ever been.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because his game makes more sense at that position.
Thank you, Reddit, r/ABA.
Yeah. But then you also have, you know, seven-footers who are shooting from three, handling the ball. You got Anthony Davis, Giannis, you know, just to name a couple, who have the size of centers but are playing power forward, and even in Giannis' case, sometimes small forward. So, you know, how does that mesh? And, I mean, we talk a lot about the back and forth of, like, how it goes from a guards league to a bigs league, and we kind of talk about that pendulum. But when you have these two opposing forces of, like, small ball from one side and then dominant bigs on the other, while it makes for great basketball, does that sustain?
Does it sustain? Yes. It will eventually produce a once-in-a-generation talent. Because that always seems to happen with these type of events. Because in the 90s, there is always those passing guards that are super, you know, forceful. Mm-hmm. And it had a huge impact on the game. And there was always those bigs. And that eventually led to LeBron.
Yeah.
So they were like, this combination is working really well. And then LeBron came into being. So soon, we will have a dominant small guard, which eventually became Westbrook, who plays like a big man, gets all the rebounds, but is able to assist and score. Mm-hmm. So eventually, it'll produce another mega product, like another huge star. Currently, it seems like it's Giannis and like Jokic, but at the same time, you still have effective small guards like Curry and like, I miss Monte Ellis. He was in the league playing 40 minutes a game. Thanks, Warriors.
Well, and even like, does it? You talked about two like very different playing styles. You talked about Jokic and Giannis. Mm-hmm. Very, very different. You've got one that's very much a pass first center. The closest that we've seen to a point center
since Arvydas Sabonis.
Yeah. But then on the other side, you've got, you know, probably one of the most dominant paint players in Shaq. So, like, which direction do you think the league will go eventually? Do you think it'll go with more of that hyper-athletic or more of that skill-based? Because we do see that split happening. And me, myself, I do think it's going to end up being that skill-based based on what we end up seeing out of the guards and players like Anthony Davis where, you know, Anthony Davis is pulling up from three, you know, potentially from the logo at times. I mean, you know,
athleticism is temporary. The three-point is forever.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, especially with us being in the age of analytics, I mean, you know, it's anyone's guess at this point.
Analytics is faulty because that basically analytics is saying that Allen Iverson was not a superstar. I don't stick with analytics that much. Analytics is for people that want to prove that they are right.
I would agree.
They use those stats to pull. Yeah, actually, the two-point shot. I joke about, the mid-range two-point shot is ineffective. If you can hit it,
yeah, if you can
still
hit
2 points.
Yeah, if you can hit it, you can hit it. And I mean, we've seen players, you know, create their entire careers off a mid-range shot.
Paul, DeMar DeRozan.
Chris Paul, Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi. Michael. Yeah.
Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
Yeah. Well, but even in today's league, where, you know, it is a three-point-centric league, we have seen players that have made their entire money off of hitting mid-range shots.
Sean Livingston
is, who is, I mean, multi-time champion at this point. So, you know, I would tend to agree with you that we do put a little too much stock into analytics, but, I mean, analytics does, whether you agree with it or not, it does show that the three-point shot is more effective. I mean, if you can hit a really deep two, odds are you can hit a three. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can step back one more step. You can hit that shot typically. So do you think, I mean, we have players like Harden, Curry, Dame, those being those, you know, very dominant three-point shooters, right? Mm-hmm. And creating this league where, you know, it is based on the three-point, do you think that mid-range is going to eventually die?
No. Mid-range will never die because let's talk about those three players again, all right? One of them has actually won a couple of championships. Why is that? I can promise you it's not on analytics because Harden's whole, like, Rockets run has been based on analytics. Ever since Daryl Morey was like, you know, get rid of Dwight, let's play small ball. All right, you got a couple 60-win seasons. You know, you got to the playoffs all those times, but against the Warriors, it's nothing. And then you have somebody that didn't really give a shit about analytics in the Trailblazers that just put a bunch of shit together. And when is that got them? The eighth seed. What did the Warriors do? They took what they had, and then they, like, expanded upon it. And so Steph Curry has been able to win because not only did they use some analytics, but they used team chemistry, and they used the proper coaching technique to get it all cohesively working. Because no matter how villainous that Warriors team was, like, you can't just mind team it and, like, glue a bunch of shit together and expect it to work. That was a well-coached, like, 2017-2018 Warriors team.
Yeah. Well, I tend to believe the Warriors did it right with their, you know, building their dynasty. I think it's fair to call them a dynasty at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, they drafted Curry, Clay, and Draymond, I mean, which was their original big three. Mm-hmm. And moved. Eventually, they did get Durant, which did cause a lot of uproar. But, I mean, again, that was a very clear conclusion to what was happening within the mobility of the league. So, going back to my original question with, like, the mid-range, and, like, and I know you brought up that, like, only Curry's won. But you can't, I mean, you can't ignore the fact that it also has changed how players approach what they're doing. I mean, now you've got, you know, you got a high school courts now where they're doing shoot-arounds. No one's doing layups anymore. Everyone's going to the three-point line. Everyone, you know, what does that do to, you know, I mean, we're both really big fans of classic bigs, you know, playing physical, all that kind of stuff.
And rest in peace, Jahlil Okafor.
Yeah.
That was when the post died. When Jahlil Okafor, a once-in-a-generation talented, perfect, one of the best post scorers, and, like, had a great mid-range shot, everything. As soon as that second season came in where Embiid was just shooting threes. Casual, it was over for him.
Yeah, so what do you think that does? I mean, you've got a whole generation that are basing, I mean, with our generation and, you know, younger, who are basing their entire games off of threes. So how does that correlate to, I mean, obviously not everyone's going to be able to shoot threes. Because, I mean, but, I mean, 3 points is something that if you work on it a lot, you can at least get rather consistent on.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're Ben Simmons, which we'll see how that goes.
He's eventually going to hit those.
Oh, he hit one in the bubble.
Yeah.
He hit one in the bubble. So, I mean, when you've got this generation moving up with this, with the game that they've based off of Harden, Dame, and Curry, you know, you've even seen newer players that are basing off the three-point, like Trae Young, Luka, who are kind of basing off of that as well. You see a lot more of that within these young players. Does that continue, or do we end up seeing more of an inside game as, you know, we have less you know, sharp shooting players come in to college and, like, AAU and all that kind of stuff? I mean, we talk about this pendulum a lot. Do you see that pendulum happening?
Yeah, it has to switch back, because eventually then when the league's small and you get, like, a 7 foot some guy and he's shooting threes, you're like, why not? He's just, because that's what they did with Porzingis. Everybody wants the bigs to shoot threes, but when Porzingis comes in and he's shooting threes, it's like, why doesn't he post them up? You're like 7 foot three. Then it's eventually people are going to start listening and he's going to start posting up, and that's going to be more efficient for him.
Yeah.
You can't base, like, the three-point shot is the only shot you really should be taking. That's difficult. I'm like, but when you have an easy two and a difficult three, I'd rather have an easy two. So it's, you know what I mean?
That's fair. Yeah. So there's our sports section.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk a little bit about comics. How's that sound?
Ah, yes. Let's get the comics going.
So what are like some stories you're reading right now? Like what do you think, why are you reading them, and like what makes them good?
X of Swords, the only reason why I'm interested in it, it's because Mad Jim Jaspers is back, baby.
Mad Jim Jaspers is back.
One of the best moves of all time, the Jaspers Warp. That just sounds amazing, man. He's a reality warper, but he needs there to be a reality to do anything to it. That's what separates him. That's what was explained to me. That's what separates him from Franklin Richards. Franklin Richards can create something out of nothing.
Yeah.
But Jim Jaspers needs something to be there to create stuff, which is awesome.
Yeah. So I'm currently reading Three Jokers.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing storyline.
Oh, yeah.
Set up a few years ago, back when Batman sat in the Mobius chair,
mm-hmm.
asked the Mobius chair, you know, who is the Joker?
Bro, which
responds,
one?
Yeah, which one? which left a lot of readers, especially longtime Batman fans, that were like floored, right? So basically the premise is you've got these three Jokers, the Killing Joke Joker, you've got like a Silver Age type of Joker, and then you've got like the Red Hood Joker. And just the Silver Age is kind of like a criminal mastermind kind of Joker back in that time period of DC.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of see everything that these three Jokers have done, like you have little flashbacks, and they kind of you see them go against like the correlation, like Batman family. So like the Red Hood one goes against Red Hood, and then you expect that with that happening, you would get the Killing Joke Joker against Batgirl, right? Because, yeah, you know, he kind of shot her and paralyzed her and then, yeah, all that. But we actually don't end up seeing that play out, which disappointing for some fans, but the ending does kind of bring it back up, and we get to see that, without, you know, giving too much spoilers, that the real Joker did all of this just to become the primary force of pain for Bruce Wayne. Mm-hmm. Which is the most Joker thing,
yeah,
that it could be. You know, he's not getting enough attention. He's just going to take out the other thing that's getting attention. So what makes a good story for you?
Growth and development. That's always important. But you have to play to the fans. You can't just like, oh, they're just catering to the... That's their job.
Yeah.
Give me what I want. I want to see something cool. Like, I enjoyed it when they were like, when they were doing the Worldbreaker Hulk storyline, they were like, bro, why don't we do the Juggernaut versus the Hulk? What would happen? And they did it perfect. They were like, yeah, he diverts the Juggernaut. He did not beat the Juggernaut. He diverted him.
Yeah.
To make him flip like halfway across like the city, which was a great, because it shows that even though he's strong enough to like crush an entire coastline, he could not stop the Juggernaut, which keeps precedent that when he gets going, like, that's what I always wanted to see, stuff like that. And then when they were doing this newer storyline where Death Metal,
yeah,
where Superboy Prime comes back, it's just awesome. I love that type of stuff. A little too much emphasis on the Batman Who Laughs. It's kind of played itself out.
Well, but the Batman Who Laughs is kind of been the whole premise of the metal saga in general. Mm-hmm. With like Dark Knight's metal and all that kind of stuff, which is kind of what led to the whole storyline. Yeah, to what led to Death Metal. So I mean, I'm not too upset about them putting too much focus into Batman Who Laughs, especially since, I mean, he's just a really interesting character. Especially in like one of the newest issues where they end up, Batman Who Laughs gets killed by Wonder Woman. Mm. But they save like all the different Batman, the evil Batmans from the Dark Universe come in, and they're like, we're just gonna take his body, we're gonna put him in the Dr. Manhattan Batman. We put his brain in the Dr. Manhattan Batman, and the Dr. Manhattan Batman just like sealed it in, and it just became like the Batman Who Laughs, but with Dr. Manhattan's powers.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
The Darkest Night.
Yeah, the Darkest Night. Which is crazy. And like getting to see, even, you know, even within evil characters, getting to see that character development and getting to see like, because I mean, character development doesn't always have to happen for heroes, right?
Yeah.
We can have that, you know, evil groups that progress throughout the story as well. And I tend to think that's what makes a really good story, is like not only when your hero develops, but when your villain develops right next to him, right?
I just want to say, people that get on Batman for like, hey, we're tired of Batman not killing his villains. I'm like, if there's not, that's the whole point of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people complain that, like this new storyline where Ghostmaker comes in and he's like killing a bunch of people that are like bad guys and stuff like that. I'm like, they're like, yeah, he's a better version of Batman. He's actually taking out the people. I'm like, so you want him to kill the criminals, right? But in that process, he becomes a bigger criminal.
Yeah.
Because he becomes a mass murderer. And so that it becomes counterintuitive at that point.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't want to seem like a... Batman doesn't want to seem like a dictator, but more like a protector, which is why he's, you know, arresting them.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. So what are some of your favorite, like, let's go heroes. What's some of your favorite heroes? And it can be Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, whatever you're feeling.
I really like Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern. The most creative out of the Green Lanterns. I really enjoy The Flash. I like Barry Allen, but the Wally West really gets me sometimes.
When you and Wally West basically have the same personality.
Yeah. Yeah. I love him. He's the fastest Flash, proven factually. I think he could one-shot Superman because he runs at... Superman's not fast, so he can run at the speed of light and, like, infinite mass punch. That should be able to, like, scientifically one-shot him. But, you know, plot armor. My favorite Marvel hero would have to be either A, Wolverine, or the Hulk. Hulk stories are always really nice for me. What about you?
DC, favorite hero. I really like Aqualad. Not just because of Young Justice, which, as you know, I'm a really big fan of.
Mm-hmm.
But just because of, you know, you see him in tandem. In a couple of storylines, he's not in a whole lot of Aquaman storylines as a whole. But the ones that he is in, it is nice to see, you know, where he progresses. He got his own standalone comic for a little while. And he's one of the more creative aspects of, especially you know, Aquaman. I'm not super excited about Aquaman most of the time. But, you know, Aqualad is, in my opinion, a more interesting version of him.
Mm-hmm.
As far as Marvel is concerned, it used to be Hulk. When I was really young, my favorite one was Hulk. I had the Hulk hands and everything, and I beat the shit out of my older brother with it. You know, because, you know, I'm a massive dude. Now it's probably... I've started really getting into Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I got on the Spider-Man bandwagon really late, probably when I was around 15 or 16 in comics. So, obviously, we had Miles Morales, and we had Peter Parker. But I do like what they've done. You know, we've always had, like, this multiversal, you know, storyline within Marvel. Mm-hmm. But I like how they've transferred that into with Sony's development of the Spider-Verse.
I also like Hyperion.
Hyperion is really good, too.
I know he's just a carbon copy of Superman, but Hyperion, King Hyperion as a villain was phenomenal, and how he got the shit beat out of him by Blue Marvel.
Mm. Fair enough. So, well, speaking of villains, what are some of your favorite villains?
Well, we're going to have to go with Superboy Prime. Just the, like I usually bring up, the Brawly effect. Anytime you put a dude that's really strong and has a lot of muscles kicking everybody's ass, everybody's going to fucking love it. Which is why Brawly, even though he's written as a horrible Dragon Ball Z villain, he's probably one of the most popular of that series, just because of his aesthetic, his ability to just wreck everybody's shit. Superboy Prime is probably going to have to take it from DC, besides, you know, the main staples of the Batman's Rogues Gallery. For Marvel, I would usually say Doctor Doom, but I'm going to have to roll with... What's his name? It's between Hank Pym, Ultron, when they were merged together, or Hydra, Captain America, because that was a cool turn.
Yeah, that was a really cool tone. For me, with DC, my favorite one reading right now is probably The Batman Who Laughs, just because that's what I'm currently reading. He's just a really interesting character. But my favorite one in general is probably the Anti-Monitor. Mm-hmm. Mostly just because he's one of those, like, we don't know a lot about him, but what we do know about him is that anytime he comes in, it's basically a world-ending event. because he's that powerful. No one can stop him. Which, there is something to be said about just pure ultimate power within, like, if this villain comes in, you know pretty much everyone's gonna die.
Yeah.
On the Marvel side of things, I was also a really big fan of Hank Pym Ultron. Mm-hmm. I was a big fan of Ultron in the comics without Hank Pym in general. But favorite is probably MODOK. Just because, like, I don't know. I always had a real soft spot for him because, like, you know, all he wants to do is kill things. Mm-hmm. And he's really bad at it. So there's just a little soft spot there for, you know, one of the more classic villains, overarching villains in Marvel.
Taskmaster is also one of my favorite villains.
Taskmaster is really good.
He can. Did you know he can go super speed? He can learn how to do super speed by, like, double fast forward in karate movies and stuff like that?
That's ridiculous.
No.
Crossbones is another really good one.
Punisher is also another one of my favorite heroes. He also hates cops. So stop using his loco. He's killed cops.
He does kill cops.
The creator hates cops. I don't know why they thought, I don't know, personal brand of justice type stuff, I guess.
Yeah. So, we talked about sports. We talked about comics. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a little D&D.
Oh, hey, yeah. What was that? Can we get a little dice roll? That should be some of the sound pads, all three of our topics. One should be a basketball squeaking. Another one should be a dice roll.
You mean sneaker squeaking?
Yeah, sure.
I've never heard of basketball squeak.
Never heard of basketball squeak?
So, for those of you all who don't know, D&D, or Dungeons & Dragons, for, you know, the more well-versed people out there, Dungeons & Dragons is a tabletop role-playing game where you and a group of friends, or not friends, you know, you could do it with, I guess, your enemies, but that's not... That actually would probably be pretty fun. Let's get a group of people that we hate, Eric, and let's play D&D with them.
All right.
But you get together with a group of people, and I like to consider it more of like a shared story. Mm-hmm. You have one person that kind of runs everything. They're called the Dungeon Master. And they kind of facilitate what's going on. They create your world, put everyone in it. But as far as, like, the choices that players make, that's on them. Mm-hmm. So imagine a game like Skyrim. Mm-hmm. But then imagine all of that being in your head. And going through a conversation where you're basically telling and, like, acting through the plot of Skyrim. Right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the best way I can describe what we're doing in our dingy basement until 2 o'clock in the morning. So one of the things that goes into the game is character building and, like, what makes a good character. So in your opinion, how do you go about your character building? And also in your opinion, what makes a good character?
In my character building, I start with my class and I think about, what would be a really cool concept for me? And, like, with Droxwell, it's just like, oh, crocodile, red crocodile. Big. I was like, this is going to be fun. I get to be... Let's make him stupid. Because I've never got to play... I don't usually get to play stupid characters. I was like, I like being... I don't know how to count. So it's fun. I like not being able to know what if I'm being cheated or not. So when I learn how to count, I can come back and kill him. But with, like, my warlock, I was like, all right. So what happens if an Azamor... They're... celestial being wasn't there for them. And that's why he's a Pact of the Fiend, which is really... I was like, that's a cool concept. Now we have two Azamar in a party. And I try to think, what would be most fun for me? And how can I... I usually get stuck in the tank role, you know, put in a box. But, you know, I decided, you know, I'm not going to do that anymore. And I've said, you know, at least 10 times. Yeah. But it's mostly about what I think would be really fun for me. What makes a good character is your ability to... how you can survive, and you shouldn't go after gimmicks. Like, yeah, gimmicks are fun, but if your gimmick... is debilitating to the party on purpose, it's not really a good one. You're just being a dick.
Yeah. I typically, when I create a character, I don't get to do this very often anymore because I've been stuck in a Dungeon Master role for a couple of months now. But when I do get to create a character, I typically go for my flaws first. So I like to know, as you know, I'm really big into the role-playing side of Dungeons and Dragons and getting to know my character and...
Wait. Shh.
And
he's asleep.
Oh, for those of you who are new to Grayman Media, we have a friend, another fan favorite on the show. His name is Thomas.
I'm inebriated.
He is. he is currently listening in on us recording, and he has fallen asleep on the couch next to us. So when he hears this episode, he's probably gonna look at me and say, "Wow, what a fucker!" but we have already put him on trial, and he has already pled guilty to being a fucker. So if he does that on any format on Grayman Media, I expect everyone on here to
call him a fucker.
Yeah, to call him a fucker and to call him out on his lies. Cool. All right. So, but I typically go for my flaws. Like I said, as you know, I'm big into the role playing.
Yeah.
So when I'm building a character, I like to know, like, first of all, what can I role play well? And also what's going to get me out of my comfort zone. So right now I'm running a sociopath.
Yeah.
which has been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun to role play the character. I've had to get out of my comfort zone a lot, with like the kind of decisions I've made and like how I interact with certain members of the party. Cause I've had to go at this from a very manipulative side of things. Like actually like, you know, while also like, you know, I you know, produce for the party and I play my role, but also like as far as like the role play aspect of like, you know, when I get to talk to people, it can go one of two ways. And I can be a very shy person or I can just be like, just calling you out on your bullshit, which I typically, Thomas is actually in our Dungeons and Dragons game as well. He has been getting the brunt of my character's name is Morthos. He has been getting the brunt of the pressure as far as the manipulation goes, and having to second guess what decisions he's gonna make to better the party. And especially with some other aspects that are going on that we'll fill in later. Unfortunately, the listeners don't get to be privy to that information yet. So what with that? Let's give a little update on what's going on, just to kind of give the viewers kind of an idea of what this game is all about. Let's give like a little recap of what's going on. You can do one campaign. I'll do the other. I'll do the one that I run, and you'll do the one that we all play in.
Okay.
So just give a little recap, and then kind of give some interesting topics about what's going on.
Well, in the Noodles and Nimrods campaign, with the characters Droxel, Morthos, Quartz, Tosimul, and...
Z,
and... What was TJ's character?
Oh, Yorm?
Yorm Criminal. We've all settled down in a manor, house within the city of Waterdeep. And it's haunted by a ghost named Lif. And there's a bromance budding between Droxel and Lif. He even tucked him in one night. It was amazing. Not going to expose a lot of details of it, but man, it's going to go places. Droxel has turned into an idiot savant from somehow coming up with schemes. He couldn't work a regular job, so he's now doing illegal work, smuggling. Morthos is making a lot of money. Criminal stole for... Yorm has stolen from Tosimul, and Quartz is completely clueless. And it's just been a wild ride, just, you know, being stupid. It's, I haven't, I haven't had this much fun in a long time. I haven't got the many kills compared to the other campaign, but this is just great. I could care less.
So in our other campaign, I'm the dungeon master, so I kind of have control over what's going on and like the situations that you all get put in that you all have to exercise creative thinking to get out of. So the current situation that we're in, the party is becoming more and more aware of this overarching threat of a giant five-headed dragon queen who is about to get raised from the Nine Hells to basically destroy the entire world. It's very much that classical, you know, the dragon part of Dungeons & Dragons, where the big bad dragon, we have to go fight it, you know, this is what's getting put in front of us. And then there are little storylines within that. Currently, you all are in the town of Greenest, helping them from a dragon attack, actually. An adult red dragon that has, you know, been terrorizing this town for, and your party for what seems like forever.
Yeah.
At this point. And, you all have recently been able to rekindle, like, a lot of, you know, the joints and all that, and, because a lot of your characters did die, earlier on.
Yeah.
And you all have had to remake characters, and we've had to have some interesting dialogues to get a party together again.
Bought how like 27 pounds of weed?
Yeah. We did introduce weed into the campaign, and they all partake. Supposed to be just a little side gag, and now I guess this is going to end up being a giant enterprise within the country. But you know, there's this overarching threat, and we're about to add another player into the mix, which will give us 7,
mm-hmm.
and should be pretty interesting. The party dynamic is something that I'm interested to see what happens, because we've got the party is not very well constructed. if I'm being quite honest,
I was gonna play a warlock. God damn it!
We've got 3 casters in the party, 2 martial characters, which are just like, you know, hand to hand combat. And then we've got a ranged weapon specialist. And we're about to add in a tank / secondary healer, which hopefully will balance out your party a little bit better and create a little bit better content for combat. But yeah, so that's basically what's going on in the other session. So, and, you know, Dungeons & Dragons is something that we've been playing not as long.
Yeah.
Since last, what, 2 years now?
Yeah, 2 years.
I've been playing since high school. You know, I started in 3.5, moved up to 5 when it transitioned. But I was very much a 3.5 purist, if you will. I thought the combat was better, but one thing that I have liked a lot more about 5th edition is it leaves a lot more opportunity for roleplay than 3.5 has.
Damaging cantrips,
yes. That's actually been one thing that I haven't liked. Because, really? Well, because it used to be that casters had to be very, very particular with how they were casting.
Mm-hmm.
And now it just seems like you can deal damage on just whatever. It used to be you had to very strategically place attacks and then support, made for a much more balanced caster class, like say a wizard or a sorcerer. But now everyone's a glass cannon, which is fine. You know, there is a part for that within Dungeons and Dragons, but you know my main problem with 5th edition has been that the combat's not as interesting because it doesn't reward as much as far as like creative strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not going to reward you, why would you do it, right?
Right.
So players just don't learn how to play strategically in combat. And then also, It's really easy. You know what that reminded me of?
What?
You know the Windows XP error noise, the doom. Yeah. But it seems like, especially with caster classes, it's a lot easier to get put into a box or like a little bottle, mm-hmm. where there are certain spells that are just very obviously better than other spells.
Yeah.
And it can be really difficult to make that choice of like, I'm going to take a worse spell for the RP value of it, right?
Right.
Which is why I've become a really big fan of homebrew spells. I recently have gotten into kind of rewriting a lot of different things about like how I want to play and all that kind of stuff. And I've started to realize the next caster class I want to play is a necromancer. Mm-hmm. But I've also realized there's not a lot of really, really good necromancy spells that compete with like evocation spells or transmutation spells.
Yeah.
Or even divination spells. Which, if you don't know what that is, I'm sorry. it's this lingo for different types of spells, different schools. But with necromancy, I've really had to start writing spells. And, you know, getting permission from DMs to be able to run them, obviously. Mm-hmm. But creating spells that compete with these other schools that will make the RP value of a character more valuable. And so what's your opinion on homebrew? Because I know you haven't dabbled in it too much, but...
I was, with Droxel, I was really trying to run the Beast, Path of the Beast, which was an Unearthed Arcana, which I don't know what that is, because it's kind of blurry, because Wizards is starting to take more from it. But I wanted to run Path of the Beast because what it does, it turns you into an actual legit fucking monster. And so you would get like claws or like your teeth would actually do more damage. And I was like, there's not really a point since I'm a lizard folk, but if I was like a regular like person or something like that, it'd be cooler. I really like homebrew because it shows the creativity of people.
Yeah.
I saw a couple of paths, like the Oath of the Sea, where you gain like unlimited movement speed when it comes to like the ropes and stuff like that on your ship.
Mm-hmm.
You can go anywhere. It's like stuff like that. And then I saw a really cool monster. It was called a False Hydra. And you would have to pass a save of 19 or else you would not be able to see it or know where it's at. And it can still attack you, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, I've brought in a lot of homebrew creatures, like combat creatures to face you all in... Oh, the session that I run is called The Dudes.
Mm-hmm.
I should be very clear about that. because it was originally going to be called The Dudes. We capitalized both the D's for, you know, D&D, obviously. Mm-hmm. But Eric decided at our... Was our last session?
Yeah.
All right, cool. At our last session that, you know, they came out to them, like this group of adventurers came into this small town that was getting attacked by a dragon, and then kind of helped run off some of the cultists that were supporting the dragon. So obviously people wanted to know who they were. They're like, and the town master came up, it's called a governor mm-hmm. in this sense, but the governor came up and asked, like, who are you? And Eric's character, without skipping a damn beat, looks up and goes, we're the dudes.
I'm Deutero Uno.
And that became canon. That's just the canon element of our story, that they are just now called the dudes. Which is certainly something.
We could change it at any time. I don't care.
No, we're not retconning. We don't retcon. This is canon, and it will be remaining canon until you all die. Or if I might add, you all kill the dragon.
If we kill the dragon?
Yeah. Well, because then we'll have to start a new campaign, because there'll be nothing left to do. But this actually leads me to my next thing.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about this for a while, about streaming or doing some sort of like podcast style for our sessions. You know, you see some... you know, very successful groups like Critical Role who do this. We're not on the same level as, and I do not claim to be on the same level as Matthew Mercer in terms of, you know, DMing.
Yeah.
However, this is something that we have been interested in. And like, what would you envision that looking like?
So there's two paths. Either we can do a weekly one shot, or a different person takes over as DM, and we can just see how ridiculous it can get. Or we can just like, we have someone be the set DM, and then we go over each game. Like, we follow and progress all the characters. And if somebody dies, they die. You know, it's all right. They come back as a different character. But if we do the dudes, I have to come up with a completely, like, I have to come up with a voice, like a set voice, because I've been trying some other stuff. I've been thinking about pulling my evil villain laugh, because I want the tone of JB to be like, I want him to give off this aura like, that man's completely evil. I fucking refuse to believe that man's a good guy. And then him just like, hi, how's your day going? I saved your puppy.
So we've talked about a couple of different options on how to kind of proceed with this. And we've kind of got a plan on how we would do it, mm-hmm. With, you know, production wise. But we're still trying to figure out content wise what we would do. And I like the idea of having that long term thing. I think that's a little easier for people to listen to rather than just like every week you're going to come in. It's a different. Like, you have no idea what's going to happen. And I think it's a little easier to keep people listening, if that makes sense. So, with that being said, you know, what would your idea of, like, you know, whether you would want to do it, like, would you want to start it now? Would you want to start it in our, like, once we start a new campaign, which would probably be in the next 8 months, which would be a while. Like, it's, but that also gives us time to be able to prepare the show. You know, what would your idea of that be?
Well, I would want something to where it's structured in the sense of, like, it feels like an actual TV show. I don't want it to be railroaded either. I want it to be extra sandbox, not like, I don't want it to be too sandboxy where it's like, oh, there's so much I can fucking do. But I want it to be able to, like, I want it to be, like, you know, I want there to be a main story, but I want to be able to have, like, little side ventures as well. You know. God,
your players are so picky.
I know.
God.
I can't help
it. So you want, like, a regular campaign?
I want it to be, like, I don't want to say Skyrim because that's too much.
And it's pretty cliched.
Yeah.
I know that we were talking about, you know, Skyrim in the head, but it's just best the way to, that's why we describe it that way, is because it's a cliche.
I want it to be like a, like, you know how a regular show is and how every episode is like, what the fuck? It's like one little thing turns into a huge thing, but in the end it progressed towards a story and they use the keyboard in the end to go back to the end of time.
Yes.
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 I want it to be something like that, to where it's like every little thing pops up eventually, and so it's like recurring. Like, I like recurring jokes and callbacks a lot. That's something I would enjoy a lot. It would be really cool if you do it as, like a flashback. Like, have the characters all in their, like, they're in a retirement home and they're talking about the times. And when they're reminiscing about a story or something like that, it's just all of them starting at level one. And then you would, like, they would interject into stuff like that.
Yep. So, you know, that's the idea. And we're going to keep hashing it out. Well, you know, if it ends up becoming a show, it ends up becoming a show.
And if you can count how many times we say, you know, in this podcast,
you know,
we're going to have a, you know, button. It has to happen.
I'm here for it. Well, that's episode one.
He's Austin.
And he's Eric. And we are
the Baldcasters. Thanks for listening.